Welcome to Teleforum, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President, General Counsel, and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of practice group Teleforum calls, become a Federalist Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federalist Society virtual event. My name is Sam Fenler, and I'm an Assistant Director of Practice Groups with the Federalist Society. Today, we're excited to host a litigation update on Jackson versus Raffensperger, featuring Renee Flaherty. Renee is a senior attorney with the Institute for Justice. She has been with IJ since 2013, where she litigates cases concerning property rights, economic liberty, and school choice at the federal and state levels. Our moderator today is Jamie Cavanaugh. Jamie is an attorney and legislative counsel for the Institute for Justice, where her practice focuses on economic liberty and private property. Jamie's views on legal matters have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, NBC News, Bloomberg, and other media outlets. If you'd like to learn more about today's speakers, their full bios can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. After our speakers give their opening remarks, we will turn to you, the audience, for questions. If you have a question, please enter it into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window, and we'll do our best to answer as many questions as we can. Finally, I'll note that, as always, all expressions of opinion today are those of our guest speakers and not the Federalist Society. With that, Jamie, thank you very much for joining us today, and the floor is yours.
Thanks, Sam. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Renee and I are both attorneys at the Institute for Justice, and we're both the case team for the case that we'll be talking about today. This case started 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago now. So we've had plenty of time to learn everything about it, and we're really excited to get to share a huge victory with everyone. Before we start, I'm going to define what a lactation consultant is, because I realize sometimes we talk about this and some people aren't really sure. So we challenged a license for lactation consultants in this case, and lactation consultants are women who help other women learn how to breastfeed. They work in doctor's offices, hospitals, private practice. They see moms on Zoom, over the phone, stuff like that. And I hear that new moms find them very, very helpful, and we need to keep increasing access to these kinds of services. So with that, Renee, I wanted to ask you to let you start by just telling us what the license would have done.
Sure. Thank you so much, Jamie. And thank you, Sam, for having us on here to discuss this really exciting case. As Jamie said, we've been litigating it for 5 years, so we've got plenty to say. But in answer to her question, Georgia was one of the first states in the country to license lactation consultants. And it was really actually quite an onerous license. And, from Jamie's description, this is not something that really needs a license. This is practical advice that lots of different people with lots of different levels of training can give. But when you look at lactation consultants, there are a lot of women who do this for a living, and there are a lot of private certifications that you can get. And one of those private certifications is called an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, or an IBCLC. And in order to become an IBCLC, you have to go to college, you have to have hundreds of hours of supervised clinical experience, and you have to take an exam. And as you can imagine, this is a really expensive and time-consuming process, and not a lot of people can become IBCLCs. But they've got a very powerful kind of network across the country where they started pushing for licensing laws all over the country. And in a lot of places, it failed. But in Georgia, back in 2016, it actually passed. And it was supposed to go into effect in 2018. But at that point, IJ stepped in and we challenged it.
Yeah. So tell us about our plaintiffs and who we represented and why they cared about this license.
Sure. So our plaintiffs were a woman named Mary Jackson, and her nonprofit called Reaching Our Sisters Everywhere, or ROSE. And Mary has over three decades of experience as a lactation consultant. She is someone who teaches doctors and nurses and medical students how to help families breastfeed. And she's kind of one of the undisputed masters of breastfeeding skills and knowledge in Georgia. And you can immediately tell that something's wrong with the licensing law when someone like Mary Jackson doesn't qualify for the license. Because she's not an IBCLC, she's a CLC, which is a certified lactation counselor. And that is a 45-hour course, which is perfectly sufficient to give you all the knowledge that you need to do your job. But Mary works in a hospital. She works with women all over Georgia and really even all across the country through her nonprofit ROSE, which she formed with a dear friend of hers back in 2011 to help women of color learn to breastfeed. So ROSE goes out in those communities and uses volunteers and its employees to go out in those communities and help them breastfeed. And they don't actually have a lot of IBCLCs working for ROSE. They have mostly CLCs and people with no certification at all. But they're all perfectly qualified to do what they do. And just like Mary, have a lot to offer. But this licensing law stood to really endanger what ROSE was doing.
Yeah. And just to kind of highlight that fact, to emphasize that fact, you know, these women could continue doing their work in any other state. There are three other states that license lactation consultants. That's Rhode Island, Oregon, and New Mexico. But none of those licenses actually restrict or completely prohibit people from practicing lactation care. They just can't call themselves licensed. They might not be eligible for a license unless they have a certain type of training in those states, but they can keep working. They can keep getting paid. Renee, can you tell us about the exceptions to the license in the law?
Sure. So this license was actually kind of like Swiss cheese. It was riddled with exemptions, but most of them didn't make any sense. The biggest one was that if you were doing it for free, if you weren't making a living providing lactation advice, then you weren't subject to the license at all. So only people who were paid to give advice were subject to the licensing law. And then also exempted were people like doctors and nurses and other medical professionals, which intuitively may sound like it makes sense, but it actually doesn't, because as we learned through discovery in this case, a lot of doctors and nurses know absolutely nothing about breastfeeding. And someone like Mary is much more qualified to be giving breastfeeding advice than these people who are exempt from the law. And also government employees were exempt from the licensure law.
Right. So it's good enough for government work, but not for
exactly
anyone else.
Right.
So in Georgia, when you bring constitutional claims, on appeal, you can skip the intermediate appellate court and go straight to the Georgia Supreme Court, which we actually did twice in this case. Talk about the first time we went up to the Georgia Supreme Court.
The first time was on a motion to dismiss. That was way back in, you know, we filed the case in 2018. So we're talking 2019, 2020. We were dismissed in the trial court, both of our claims. We had a substantive due process claim and an equal protection claim. And the trial court actually said that on our due process claim that there was no right to economic liberty or right to earn a living in Georgia, which is just flat out wrong, completely contrary to black letter law in Georgia. And so we went up on both claims, and the Georgia Supreme Court unanimously reversed and said, no, actually, there is a right to economic liberty in Georgia, and you've stated a claim, an equal protection claim. And so we're going to send you back down to actually go through discovery and actually be able to prove your claims and determine what kind of legal test applies to these claims.
Yeah. So even that, even though it's just, you know, winning on the motion to dismiss, was a really important ruling. You know, we at IJ were very excited that the Supreme Court of Georgia took the opportunity to explicitly say The right to earn an honest living free from unreasonable government regulation is absolutely protected by the Georgia Constitution. That isn't always clear in other states, and even federal judges aren't really sure if that's the case under the federal constitution. So to have something, you know, as explicit as this was really exciting for us. And then obviously the case moved on. And so at that point, you mentioned that we learned some facts during discovery earlier, and, you know, we're trying to kind of prove sort of a novel claim at this point. And so we did a lot of discovery. Can you tell us about some of the facts that were important in the record and what we found in discovery?
Right. I think that the record was significant, not so much for what it did show as what it didn't show. We were able to demonstrate that there was just a complete lack of evidence that any lactation consultant had ever harmed any mother or baby in Georgia because of being unlicensed. The government wasn't able to come forward with any evidence that licensure was necessary because there were actually people running around, you know, harming mothers and babies in Georgia. And so not only did we bring forward expert testimony from a doctor and a breastfeeding expert to kind of lay out for the court exactly what lactation consultants do and to show why it is safe, practical, on the ground advice, show that they're not diagnosing or treating medical conditions or anything like that. Really, the record was special because it didn't show that there were any of those dangers present with lactation consulting.
Yeah, that's a great point. It didn't show that there would be more dangers associated with payment for these services either. And yeah, it was really important, I think, to have a doctor, a pediatrician, say that she relies on certified lactation consultants like Mary and, you know, Rose as an organization. We heard from other people who have used Rose that it was really important for them to find a lactation consultant who looked like them and talked like them. So, you know, increasing access and making sure that there's culturally appropriate care is also something that, you know, Rose is trying to do and would have been stopped if this license were to take effect. Okay, so we built the record and now we're at the motion for summary judgment. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So we ended up winning the case on summary judgment just on our equal protection claim, actually, and not on the due process claim. And so I think the trial court was very kind of worried by the exemptions to the law. The trial court saw that, well, if this is safe for someone to do for free, you know, why isn't it safe to do for payment? And if this is something that people, you know, doctors and nurses, even if they have no training, which we were able to show through the record, if it's safe for them to do this, then why isn't it safe for someone like Mary? The trial court was really kind of focused on those exemptions to the law. And so we won on our equal protection claim, but we did not win on our due process claim, which, you know, we found a little bit strange because usually very similar tests apply to due process and equal protection claims. And so the government appealed on the equal protection claim and we cross appealed to the Georgia Supreme Court on the due process claim and went up for a second time on both of those claims.
Yeah. And what happened there?
Yet again, we unanimously prevailed, this time just on due process. And the court actually didn't address our equal protection claim because the Georgia Supreme Court looked back to its previous opinion and said, yes, we said very emphatically the last time this case was before us that there is a right to economic liberty in Georgia. And now in this, now that the case has gone through discovery, built a record, we're going to articulate a legal test that can apply not only in this case involving lactation consultants, but to future cases involving economic regulations in Georgia.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really a huge accomplishment. And the court the court, I think, went out of its way a little bit to make sure that its holding would be generally applicable to other types of occupational licenses and perhaps other types of economic regulations. You know, it could have been written a little bit more narrowly, but the court said things like economic protectionism isn't a legitimate reason for the government to regulate an occupation. And that wasn't an argument that we had raised explicitly. And so, you know, there were a few things like that in the opinion that we were really excited about and excited to see that this court cares about this issue. Do you want to take, there's a question in the chat. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the difference between substantive due process under the federal constitution and under the Georgia constitution.
Sure. That's great. That's one of the reasons why this case is so special, is because the court went out of its way to distinguish the Georgia constitution from the federal constitution. These cases are really pretty difficult to win, especially in federal court, because of something called the rational basis test. And that is essentially, if the government is, you know, has an economic regulation, the lowest possible level of judicial scrutiny applies. Sometimes in federal court, it's good enough that there's a hypothetical or theoretical justification for a law, even if there's no practical evidence that the law is actually connected to that purpose or actually furthers that purpose. Maybe it's not the real purpose. It doesn't matter. So in federal court, generally, they're very permissive when the government wants to regulate the right to earn a living. But no longer in Georgia. In Georgia, now there has to be an actual reason behind a law restricting the right to earn a living. And it has to be a good reason. There were two specific things that the court said is not good enough. One, Jamie already mentioned, which is economic protectionism, protecting one group from economic competition with another. In this case, it was the IBCLCs that had pushed so hard for these licensing laws so that they were the only ones allowed to work. The court said that that, standing by itself, isn't going to be a good enough reason to restrict the right to earn a living. The court also said, and this is kind of more interesting in a way, that just generally calling to an increase in quality, like, oh, if you license something, then quality is automatically going to go up, right? No, you can't just assert that. You have to actually be able to draw a connection between this is what the law is doing and this is the increase in quality or increase in safety. You can't just call on generic assurances of quality in order to license a profession.
Did the court come up with this test on its own, or did it rely on anything from other courts?
So I think that this test was already there in the case law. It just had never really been pulled and pieced together, and the court hadn't recently really come up with a strong statement that this is the test that applies. So, you know, there were actually a lot of cases, prior cases about occupational licensing in Georgia. Several of them involved plumbers of all professions, which I think is really interesting because I can maybe think of a few reasons to license plumbers off the top of my head. But the court, several times, the Georgia Supreme Court in the past has said, well, you know, this particular license isn't good enough because it's got this Swiss cheese holes of exemptions, just like this lactation consultant law. So the test was there. It just was never strongly articulated by the court. And that is what this case gave it an opportunity to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And I think there were some cases where the Georgia Supreme Court had also just applied the federal rational basis test, which a lot of state courts do. A lot of litigants argue under the federal state court test, even if they're bringing a state constitutional claim. And that's something at IJ that we're always trying to distinguish. We're always trying to remind courts and lawyers and judges that your state has a constitution, and it has probably been interpreted differently than the U.S. Constitution. It probably has provisions in there that don't exist in the U.S. Constitution. Do you want to talk about some other IJ cases where we try to get rulings on state constitutional claims?
Sure. So the two that where we've gotten really strong statements from state Supreme Courts are in Texas. The Patel case back in, gosh, I guess maybe it was 2013, involving licensing of eyebrow threaders. So that is people who remove hair from eyebrows just using a cotton thread. So it's a really simple, you know, really easy process where you don't need a full cosmetology license in order to thread eyebrows. And back in 2013, the Texas Supreme Court struck down the cosmetology licensing law as applied to eyebrow threading and came up with a test that's very similar to Georgia's. And so we were looking to that. We were looking to Patel in litigating this case. And then in a bit more recent in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court held that they use a similar test in a case involving real estate brokers and a woman who is just doing simple like managing of Airbnbs, property management, and Pennsylvania wanted her to get a full broker's license, which is very, very burdensome. And so those are two examples of cases where we got a really strong statement from state Supreme Courts. And right now we're litigating several more. I'm litigating a case in North Carolina, which is a challenge to its certificate of need law, which is a medical certificate of need where your competitors actually get to veto you going into business. It's absolutely crazy. And we're challenging it not only under the rational basis test, but the North Carolina Constitution's anti-monopoly provision. And actually, excuse me, just this past Friday, that case has also been going on for 5 years. And still on a motion to dismiss, I might add. But we learned that the North Carolina Supreme Court is going to take the case. So that's very exciting. It's actually going to go up. These issues that we care a lot about, the rational basis claim and the anti-monopoly claim, will be going up to the North Carolina Supreme Court. And we've got a licensing case about hair braiding in Louisiana and a licensing case in Indiana as well about eyeglasses. So lots of exciting state constitutional cases going on.
Absolutely. I mean, hair braiding, most of the time when we tell people that you need a full cosmetology license in 20 plus states to braid hair, they're shocked. But IJ has been working on this issue since our founding in 1991. And, you know, there continue to be lawsuits in multiple states, and we continue to work on legislative fixes. So, you know, again, something that is so safe that people learn it as children, the government still finds a way to say, no, you should go to school for 2,000 hours and pay $15,000 for cosmetology school, where you won't learn 1 minute of hair braiding to get this license to be able to work legally. Okay, we have another question about whether this violates the separation of powers with judges deciding what is a good regulation. But that is the traditional role of the judiciary, right? So we have the, so these are actually statutes, not regulations, but we have the legislative branch making the laws, and you know, their backstop is, well, the courts will tell us if we make a law that's unconstitutional. We'll find out because the court will tell us. And this is where these different levels of scrutiny come into play, because courts have wanted a consistent way to review statutes and have said, you know, how can we apply scrutiny in a consistent manner? And so like Renee already said, when a challenger is challenging a economic regulation, like an occupational license or a certificate of need law, the courts are usually giving this very little scrutiny. That means they're deferring a lot to what the government said and deferring to what the legislature could have thought when they passed the law. And even if circumstances on the ground have changed since the law was passed, courts often don't consider that. So part of what we're trying to do at IJ isn't only getting the state Supreme Courts to articulate that they're state constitutions, you know, are more protective than the federal constitution, but we're also trying to get the courts to articulate their different standards, or, you know, whether they follow the federal rational basis test or not. The big problem with the years and decades we've had of judicial deference to the legislature is that the legislature's backstop is supposed to be the courts. But if the courts are going to defer every time and say, hey, the legislature studied this, they know better than me, then, you know, there's no constitutional backstop. There's no constitutional remedy for people who are harmed. Obviously, yes, you can try and get the laws changed. You can try and vote for new legislators, but both things are hard. So, you know, this is part of what we're trying to do with our cases as well. There's another question about whether the state argued that the Due Process Clause or Equal Protection Clauses of the Georgia Constitution were not self-executing. No, we didn't get those arguments. Were there any arguments that surprised you, Renee, from the state?
You know, I was always amused by how they tried to make lactation consulting sound very scary. They were always trying to make it sound like this very complicated, very sort of medically procedure, when if you actually talk to a lactation consultant about what they do, you'll find that it's just such simple practical advice. Like, you're telling women how to get a good latch, how to tell when their baby is hungry. You know, this is not rocket science. It's not complicated. It's not dangerous. And the other side was just always tripping over themselves to make it look as scary as possible. But I think the court saw right through that whenever we presented it with our summary judgment record.
Yeah, you're right about that. One of our, I think, favorite admissions that we pointed to in our briefs was what the government's expert said, that we needed more of all types of lactation consultants. So people with all different types of training, we needed more of them. And that, you know, that evidence showed, data showed that regardless of the type of training a lactation consultant had, you know, any type of provider that can help a mom increases the chance of positive odds. So again, just supporting this argument that there is no evidence of harm. You know, all these other states have done this with no license. Georgia has done it since Georgia was a state with no license. And again, there's no evidence of harm. And it sounds really straightforward, but in federal court, that probably wouldn't save the day, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think that if legislators want to actually address real practical problems, in this case, the only thing that our record showed that was a problem was a shortage of lactation care. So the legislature was looking at a field where there is a shortage of providers, and they licensed it, which is going to automatically decrease access to care. And so hopefully moving forward, I think the court was very clear that it wasn't imposing any kind of concrete burdens on the legislature, you know, even to come forward with evidence when they want to license a profession, but they need to be thinking moving forward that somebody's going to look at this after I do it. And so it's what I hope there's a consciousness there moving forward that somebody is going to examine this. If this turns out to be a problem in real life on the ground, then there's going to be a backstop, like Jamie was talking about, in the courts.
And another interesting fact is that Georgia actually had a licensing review committee, what we call a sunrise committee, where anytime that the legislature proposes a new occupational license, this committee reviews it and actually looks to see whether there's any data to support the need for the license. And the committee came out with a report that said it did not recommend passage of the licensing law. I mean, it specifically said it would reduce access to care if the legislature enacted the lactation consultant license. But the legislature also didn't follow the advice of of the Sunrise Committee. So that's kind of an interesting push right now in the legislative world, where a lot of states that are interested in occupational licensing reform look at things like Sunrise and Sunset Committees to either review licenses every 5 or 7 years, or Sunrise to review them before they are enacted. But the hard part then is, of course, getting the legislature to follow the advice of the committees. That's too bad that didn't happen in Georgia. And then also this year, we found out the Sunrise Committee was not continued by the state, I think, during the budget process. So it doesn't really exist in Georgia anymore, unfortunately. Okay, so you've probably touched on this a little bit, but what do you think this case means going forward in Georgia?
I think it means that, you know, the legislators will have to have it in the back of their mind that their work is going to get checked. And hopefully that will lead to wiser laws, perhaps fewer laws moving forward. But moving outside of Georgia, I think this can be an example to other state Supreme Courts that have state constitutions that are more protective of individual rights than the federal constitution. It can be another example alongside Texas and Pennsylvania of this is the way that you can articulate the test. This is the way that you can have something different than the federal test. And so I think there are probably a lot of justices out there who are interested in their own state constitutions and their own jurisprudence. And hopefully they can look to this case as a guide moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Another interesting thing about state constitutions is that they've often been revised or readopted much more frequently than obviously the federal constitution. So Georgia has had several iterations of its constitution. The most recent was 1983, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And luckily the due process provision that we used for this lawsuit had stayed consistent for a long time. So we could point backwards to all these cases that had upheld the right to economic liberty. But that's something else interesting about state constitutions, and something you have to pay attention to if you want to litigate under state constitutions, is how have these provisions changed over time, and what was the intent for any of those changes. Because like Renee said earlier, we had this long history of Georgia protecting the right to earn a living from cases like licensing photographers or limiting the size of trucks that could drive on the road, and things like that, saying, you know, there has to be a good reason to regulate all these things that affect people's ability to earn a living. And it would have been really hard for us if we couldn't have relied on all these cases. This court happened to really care a lot about the history of the case law surrounding this part of the Constitution. Sorry, I think my computer froze. Okay, so do you have any plans moving forward in Georgia?
Well, I'm litigating a big eminent domain case in Georgia, but that's an entirely separate area, property rights as opposed to economic liberty. But I'm actually hoping that I don't have to come back in Georgia. I'm hoping that, you know, moving forward, there are much fewer irrational laws on the books because of this case. And hopefully can move along to different states. I'm really excited about litigating the case in North Carolina, because it's a chance to get North Carolina to say that it uses a different test than the federal rational basis test. And then also their anti-monopoly provision, which is very exciting. So I plan on bringing more cases under state constitutions, but also under the federal constitution as well. I definitely don't have any plans on giving up those kinds of cases. IJ recently had success under the federal constitution in an economic liberty case in California. So, the story continues to unfold there as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's still ground to be made in federal courts. So it's important to use both tools. We have a party planned with our clients coming up later this month, and to thank them really for all the hard work that they went through as well, being part of this case. Poor Mary worked at a hospital in Atlanta and was being threatened all the time that she was going to be fired because she wasn't licensed, even though the license wasn't actually being enforced during the entire time that the lawsuit was pending. There's challenges for our clients as well when litigation stretches on for so long.
Yeah, and hopefully we won't see any more of these lactation consultant laws, licensing laws in particular, popping up in different parts of the country. I'm pretty much hoping that nobody tries this again. They haven't been super successful anyway. Like you said, the other states that license lactation consultants aren't nearly as onerous as Georgia's. So I think that everybody is kind of getting the message that everybody who can do this kind of work should be allowed to do this work.
Yeah. So I think the last thing I want to say is just that the defendant in this case is the Georgia Secretary of State. Right now, that's Brad Raffensperger. And the day the decision came out, Secretary Raffensperger actually issued a press release saying that, hey, the court decided the case the right way. He agrees that there should probably be fewer licenses, or, you know, he wants to take a close look at that. And he has, I think, a couple of committees going on this summer to study occupational licensing. He said he was disappointed that this case took so long to resolve. Well, I mean, he and his office could have done something about that if they didn't want to litigate for so long, but we're really happy they did so that we have the precedent moving forward. Is there anything else you want to add, Renee?
Oh, no, I think we've covered it. This has been a really great opportunity to litigate exciting issues on behalf of excellent clients and the kind of people who are IJ clients and who are willing to stand up and challenge a law like in Georgia really should be applauded. It's all about our clients, Mary and Rose.
Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Sam.
Wonderful. Well, on behalf of the Federalist Society, Jamie and Renee, I want to thank you very much for being here with us today. Thank you for sharing your time and your expertise. I want to thank our audience as well. We greatly appreciate your participation. Please check out our website, fedsoc.org, or follow us on all major social media platforms at FedSoc to stay up to date with announcements and upcoming webinars. Thank you all once more for tuning in, and we are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teleform, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. For more information about the Federalist Society, the practice groups, and to become a Federalist Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.